The pain of our past can be our greatest asset. What do we do with that statement? Think about this. The pain of our past can be our greatest asset. Today's podcast will leave you with three things. Number one, an understanding of the power of your pain. Number two, realization that there's a purpose for your pain. And number three, how to use your pain for good. The most powerful, potent path to our hearts is through our pain. As warriors, we need to consider this statement. Can our painful past really be our greatest asset? Can our past and the pain of that past motivate us to help others? Can helping others out of their pain allow us to grow a life beyond our wildest dreams? Remember, there are three levels of existence. The basic level is survival. I got cats, and I got a yard that has lots of cats that come into it. Why? Because we have food. We have water. And so just like every other living, breathing creature, there is survival. That is the lowest form of existence, survival. You're just a squirrel working to get your nut. And then there's success. But even success, even though it sounds sweet, sounds delicious, sounds intoxicating, it's all about us. And yeah, maybe a few around us get fed a little bit from the scraps from the overflow. But it's still about us. It is that third level. The level called significance is what a true warrior aspires to, because significance goes beyond ourselves. Significance requires other people. And so the answer is yes. The pain of our past can be our greatest asset. But there are some things to consider about this possibility. What we must first endure. You see, there are many constants in life, and one of them is that hurting people hurt people. These are what I call HR 101s, and certain similarities run through every single human being, and I call those HR 101. And here is one of them: hurting people hurt people. You can ban guns, you can ban pencils, you can ban Visine, you can ban radiator fluid, you can ban cars, you can ban animals. Why do I say all those things? Because that's how I've heard a lot of people being killed or died. These are all ways that people can die or be killed. But here's the problem. It's an issue of the human heart. The good book says that the human heart is wicked beyond repair. Who can understand it? Think about this. The Bible is 1,200 chapters. 1,200. Three chapters into that book, the most published, the most, I should say, possessed book around, maybe not read. Three chapters in. God kicks man out of his home. Three more chapters after that, six chapters in a 1,200 chapter book, God says, what was I thinking, man? I messed up. Man is wicked. I got to destroy them all. Sans Noah and his wife and his three kids and their wife. So sans eight. See, it's an issue of the human heart. This is why I believe with all my heart that one of the great choices of life has to do with what do we do with our pain, because pain is a constant. We all have it to different levels, to different degrees. The question, warrior, today is what do we do with our pain? The pain from our past has so much potential to build or destroy, to create compassion or anger, to make us bitter or to make us better. You know, my wife's pretty astute. And one time she said to me, no, honey, what you did is you became as a grown-up what you never had as a kid. You know, I used to wonder as a kid being abused and all that, like, why didn't anybody care? And I go out in the world and all these people, oh, how great I am and all. And then they let me go home to living hell. And so naturally kids ask, why? Why God? Why mom? Why dad? Right? We're little meaning makers. We're making meaning out of life. By the time a child is 5 years old, Dr. Alfred Adler says the majority of our map of reality is in place. And as I meet people and get to know people, epigenosis, I really realize that the one similarity that we can all say we have is we have pain. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow said, believe me, every man has his secret sorrow, which the world knows not. And oftentimes, we call a man cold when he's only sad. John MacArthur has one of my great quotes on pain. He says, you can exercise and sustain personal leadership only to the extent of your capacity to bear pain. If you can't bear your own pain, then you can't really lead. If you can respond to and bear only the pain of your family, then your family represents the full scope of your leadership potential. If, however, by God's grace, you can recognize and bear the pain of those around you, then the breadth of your leadership potential is limited only by the scope of your burden and capacity. You see, our pain is unique to us. You can have two people go through the same experience, but they're going to experience it a little bit different because no one responds to reality. We respond to our map of reality. We don't respond to what is happening to us or happened to us. We respond to how we explain it to ourselves. That's the difference. And just like our fingerprints, our DNA, our gait, our voice qualities, and 40 or so other things, pain is unique to each person. Pain creates a chasm for joy to fill up. And by the way, C.S. Lewis put it best, getting over a painful experience is much like crossing monkey bars. You have to let go at some point in order to move forward. It's a great reminder that God never allows pain without purpose. Did you know that an oyster that has not been wounded in any way does not produce pearls? Think about that. A pearl is a healed wound. It has great value. Pearls are a product of pain, the result of a foreign or unwanted substance entering the oyster. The more pearls, the more valuable. God trusts some of us more than others. That's what Romans 8:28 says. For God causes all things to work for the good for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. If we're willing to get off ourselves, remember rule number one about being a leader is not about you. We got to get off ourselves, leaders. We got to realize that there's purpose. I always tell people God didn't want David to get Uriah killed. God didn't want David to commit adultery with Bathsheba. But God causes all things to work for the good for those who love him, who are called according to purpose. What if your greatest ministry to others comes out of your greatest hurt or deepest wounds? The hard things that we may be going through now are really nothing in comparison to the glory of God that will be revealed in us later. That's what Paul says in Romans chapter 8, later on, I think it's 17 through 18. Caroline Leaf has this great saying. It's called kintsugi. Kintsugi, it's a Japanese term. It means golden joinery. It refers to the Japanese art of repairing broken pottery by mending the areas of breakage with lacquer, dusted, or mixed with powdered gold, silver, or platinum. As a philosophy, she goes on to say, it treats breakage and repair as part of the history of an object rather than something to disguise. Wow. In our world, in our heads and hearts of the human condition, we call this reframing. Reframing. See, we can't control what happens to us, but we can control what happens in us. It's always about the prepositions. We get so wrapped up in pronouns that we forget about predicates. You see, we can't control the wind, but we can adjust the sails. In other words, we can't control what cards we are dealt, but we can control how we play the cards. In other words, we can't control what happens to us. Here are the predicates, the prepositions. We can't control what happens to us. It's about location. But we can control what happens in us. How we explain it to ourselves, how we remember, how we put it back together, how we remind, how we recollect it truly does matter. It does not matter what happens to us. What matters is how do we remember it? Remember Mr. Potato Head? Every time we put his arms and legs back on, we remembered him. Every time we took his arms and legs off, we dismembered him. And so to remember something is to put it back together. And we put frames around things. The frame is the way in which a thing is put together. Mr. Potato Head, an established order to shape, to form. See, frames give meanings to words. The key is the frame we put around experience, the frame we put around words, the frame we put around our past. What to do with our pain is we got to frame it properly. See, a frame changes our internal representation. The meaning of any experience in life depends upon the frame we put around it. In essence, I know this is hard for some of you to understand, the power that we have, we were made to create. So in essence, nothing in the world has any meaning or value. How we feel about something and what we do in the world are dependent upon our perception of it. If we perceive something as a liability, that's the message we deliver to our brain. Then our brain, being programmed, produces states that make it the reality. So consider this. If we change our point of view by looking at the situation as an opportunity, we actually can change the way we respond to situations in life. And because the body releases 63 known chemicals, and some of those chemicals are released based upon what we're thinking about, it changes. It changes how we feel. It changes our motivation. It changes a lot. The key to success in life is to consistently represent our experience in ways that support us in producing even greater results for ourselves and others. So to reframe something is to frame anew. to reshape. Isn't that incredible? See, that's why I love our emotional intelligence class. I get to show you in live time, in the same room, how we work, how we process information, and exactly what we do to change the things you want to change. But here's the best part. You also get to learn how the people around you work. So we can be better husbands or wives, so we can be better parents, a better boss, a better friend. It makes sense, doesn't it? That if you understand me better and I understand you better, we now are in a position to have a better relationship. And the same thing with our past. We need to reframe our past. We need to put it in the best possible light. There's a lot of things back there that we had very little control over. There's a lot of things back there that we didn't know. There's a lot of things back there that we got someone else involved and it wound up hurting us. We got to let go and let God. We got to learn how to have grace and mercy, not just towards others, but to ourselves. We got to learn to forgive, not just ourselves, but others. And so if you change the frame you put around something, you change the meaning. So you got outcome reframing. It's just goal setting. A lot of people set goals that aren't properly formed. A lot of people set goals that they don't make real, and then they don't have any emotional connection. So why would they do something? Why, when things get tough, would they keep going? Why, when they get knocked on their butt, would they get up, pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and hit again? So you need to know how to properly form goals so you increase the probability and the possibility, and that is a form of reframing. You got life events. Identifying memories that cause an unresourceful state, and then you replace them. You change the frame with a new memory to cause a more resourceful state. This is my childhood. For 4 decades, my childhood was a point of contention. It was bitterness. It was causing me lots of trauma and drama, not just 40 years ago, not just 50 years ago, but today. But can I tell you something today, as God is my witness? I am so thankful for my childhood. I'm thankful for the pain I went through. I'm thankful for the abuse I went through. I'm thankful for the hard times. I'm thankful that I was homeless. I'm thankful that I was beaten on most of my life. I was thankful. Why? Because without that pain, without that hurt, without that drive, driven by my pain, I would not have helped tens of thousands of people. You know, that's the key. Once we process our own pain, we can help other people. But if we have not processed our own pain, how can we help other people? Because as we approach their pain, it triggers. Get in the battle between the stimulus and the response. You got to get control. That's what emotional intelligence is about. That's where our power lies. Between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. I am talking about freedom. I'm talking about power. It comes from God. It comes from within. It doesn't come from the government. It doesn't come from a man in a White House or a woman in a White House or a black house or a yellow house. It comes from us in our house. It is our control. And so simple reframing is just changing a negative statement into an action statement. Instead of saying, I'll try something, you make a commitment that you will. Instead of talking about something you're going to do in the future, you talk about, I am. I am doing this now. I commit. I resist. I empower. I change. I live. Do you hear it? What are you telling yourself over and over and over? Those are the things we believe. And this is why we got to get in the game. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself playing the victim, this is what our pain does. Our pain hits us in the face and we feel sorry for ourselves. Our pain hits us in our face and then we block it and attack. We become the persecutor. Our pain hits us in the face and we have a pity party. Or you can take charge and have your power and your freedom and change it. Instead of talking about how your supervisor yells at you all the time, play the victim, right? What if you reframe that and said, man, my supervisor must really believe in me. He's riding my butt like a pony. Instead of complaining about the money, we can't afford to spend a lot of money on Christmas presents this year. How about let's say, hey, let's go back to the true meaning of Christmas. And Christmas has never been about receiving except the free gift of salvation from our Lord and Savior Jesus. Christmas is about giving. So this year, let's just make gifts. Let's put some sweat equity into it. Instead of talking about how you have to pay $4,000 more a year in taxes this year, why don't you revel in how successful you are, how God has increased your bounty? And instead of talking about every time how you begin to succeed in a big way, what if you pull in the ultimate reframe up until now? What if you take charge of your life just like the Alamo? You draw the line in the sand and say, up until now, Up until now, I've never been too emotional. Now I'm ready to feel again. Up until now, I've been living in the past, and now I'm ready to process my pain and now live in the now to create a better tomorrow. Up until now, I've never treated my spouse the way she or he has deserved, and now I'm ready to humble myself and be that spouse that I've been called to be. Up until now. It's your life. You're not a little kid. Mommy and daddy don't run your life unless you still live at home at 40 years old. You see what's going on? What's going on is people don't know what to do with their pain. Their pain is shutting them down. Article after article after article says people, young people, are not ready for the workforce. They don't know how to resolve conflict. They don't know how to come together. They can't even talk to someone who votes differently. Someone says a word and they get triggered and shut down. They got to go into a safe space. We talked about this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. What are we doing to our kids? And now we have the answer. What to do with pain? It's either going to make us bitter or better. It's either going to be used as a reason to hurt others, like a persecutor in the drama triangle. That's what most people do. They use their pain to justify hurting others. The regurgitation of pain is one of the greatest, the upchuck of pain and bitterness. We keep a record of wrong. We keep a pound of flesh. We don't forget. We keep track of every wrong. That's autopilot. Or we can consciously make the choice to use our pain to help others in pain. What a great use of pain, to have empathy, to have understanding. Because we have walked a mile in pain's footsteps, we can have empathy, we can have understanding. And you know what I found out? That gives us street cred. But we live in a world that's being ruled by the spirit of offense. We get upset with everything. Everything's so offensive. I get it. But we can use it in a positive way. Even Jesus had two temple tantrums. He overturned the money changer's table. He pulled out a cord from the curtains and used it as a whip. You've turned my father's house of worship into a den of thieves. And he was without sin. Remember, Ephesians 4:26 says, in your anger, do not sin. Or it also says, different translation, don't sin by letting anger control you. That's the key. We are to be controlled by nothing but the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of God. The Amplified Bible says, be angry at sin, at immorality, at injustice, at ungodly behavior, yet do not sin. Do not let your anger cause you shame, nor allow it to last until the sun goes down. This is what God's telling us. And verse 26 makes two assertions about anger. So I'm not saying it's wrong to be angry. There's justified anger. And there's a time to get angry. That's what that verse tells us. Ephesians 4:26 tells us two things. There's a time to get angry, and the time to stay angry is short. You got to turn it. You got to reframe it. You got to redirect it. It's like judo. You've got to take that energy and redirect it. There are good grounds for getting angry, but no grounds for holding grudges. That's what do not let the sun go down on your anger means. It says, let the day of your anger be the day of your reconciliation. I think that was by Estius who said that. Let the day of your anger be the day of your reconciliation. And if reconciliation is impossible, if you can't heal with that person, even so, do not stroke your wound or cherish revenge. See, that's the key. When we hold a grudge, when we hold on to it, when we keep a record wrong, that's the problem. For Satan seeks a gap called grudge. That's what Piper says. Satan seeks a gap called grudge. And if he finds it, he will enter and ruin life with all manner of bitterness. The Bible says, with the presence of strife, all other sins are present. Not some, all. In the Bible, when Moses was up in the getting the Ten Commandments from God, he was gone a little too long, I think 40 days. And people downstairs, down the mountain, were getting carried away. They were worshiping other gods. They created a golden calf. That's what the Baal of Peor is. Peor means opening. We can't give opening for hatred and bitterness. And that's what a grudge does. So it's okay to be angry. There's a time to get angry. And there's a time to stay angry. And it's short. Be angry, but do not sin. Not all anger is wrong. We got to realize that some is clearly wrong. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger be put away from you, right? What's the difference between good anger and bad anger? Piper says, really, it's based on God and it's mingled with grief. You know, James 1:19 says, let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of men does not work the righteousness of God. In other words, we should be slow to anger because the anger which rises quickly is from our flesh. If we're slow to anger, if we rule our spirit and consider the matter carefully, then the anger, if it comes, may be the very anger of God. That is, our anger may be owing to the fact that God's character is dishonored, not ours. Is it mingled with grief? That's the key. Good anger is mingled with grief, right? Jesus said to get angry is Mark 3:5, right? Jesus was in the synagogue on the Sabbath about to heal a man's withered hand, and they were opposed. And it says, Jesus looked around them with anger, grieved at the hardness of their heart. See, it's okay to understand that a person does something wrong and we get angry, but there's no grief over the person's hardness. We express our indignations for the problem, but we show no longing for their softening or reconciliation. See, that's the difference. What's in the heart? And we got to keep our anger short. There's a time to be angry. We live in a world now where they want to remind you of everything that's ever been done, not just to you, but to anybody that looks like you. We got to remember Mr. Potato Head. Every time we put his arms and legs back on him, we remembered him. That's what we do in our heads. We remember. We put things back together. And what we hold on to, that dictates. Remember, between the stimulus and the response, there's a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. Someone says something or does something, and then we respond. But here's the problem, remember? The mind is 6 times faster than we can talk. So what happens when someone says something or does something, we don't respond to that. We respond to our narrative about that. That's why we've got to be in control of what happens between the stimulus and response. That is why emotional intelligence is so critical. Emotional intelligence is the right emotion, the right intensity, the right time, direct toward the right person, the right way. And this is not easy. Emotional intelligence is to be in control. Emotional intelligence is the intelligent use of emotions, the emotional use of intelligence. It is the great double helix. Remember Watson and Crick, I think it was in the 60s, 65, I think it was, they figured out DNA was a double helix. That was a huge transformation for the science community. But can I suggest emotional intelligence? The use of this fuel called emotions. And pain is a great motivator. Let's be honest, we all have it. What if? This is the question. What if our pain was a gift? Not while we are going through it, but after. But after we have overcome the moment and put it behind us, the pain can become a very useful driver. Or it can be a stopper. See, that's the key, emotions. Part of my life is working on helping people reframe the power of emotions and reframe emotions, especially men have been told men don't cry, boys don't cry, stuff your emotions. But here's the problem. The pattern is this. We stuff, snap. We stuff, snap. Emotions are the great motivator. We got to have emotional intelligence. Understand we were given these emotions for a purpose. Can you use them to your benefit and the benefit of others? God causes all things, not some things, not most things, not the good things, not the fun things, all things to work for the good for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. See, emotions are a great motivator. Companies often get learning confused with listening. A lot of people can have the gift of hearing. They can, you know, hear. But my definition of listening is application, is implementation, is the proper processing. See, a lot of companies provide lecture-style training sessions which go through one ear and out the other. It's almost a waste of time. When the key to learning at work and anywhere else is to trigger emotions, the right side of your brain has all those special endowments that make us human beings, creativity, consciousness, emotion, and that is also where we learn from. And so emotion helps us learn. See, someone can tell us 10 times to stay away from a hot stove, but it's not until we accidentally touch a scorching saucepan or the stove itself that we learn to change our behavior. All the self-help books in the world, all the great orators in the world isn't going to change it. It's application. Think about this. You hear someone beating the odds to achieving something remarkable and you learn how to set goals. Think about this. You desire to be more than other things possible. Or how about when you decide your past will no longer dictate your future? Or how about when you know that you can do more and be more than others thought was possible? You know, those are emotions. They're called inspirations. See, the power of emotions, that emotions fuel, it moves us. And so it is as well with learning. Think about this. Whether at home or at work, a couple of important emotions that are useful if we desire to stir someone up, if we desire to stimulate our friends, our family, our employees. When it comes to learning and working, we need 2 other emotions called joy and enthusiasm. See, people learn best when they're having fun. And if people get the job done and they do it in a fun way, they actually do it more effectively. You see, the body's relaxed in joy. The mind is more open, and what you're teaching is easily embraced. Your learners have got to be laughing, hit emotional experience. They'll remember stories more than they'll remain little pieces. And then enthusiasm. enthusiasm sells. Enthusiasm comes from the Greek word enthous, and it means of the spirit. You know, it's a swing in the gate, an outward energy that's inviting. It's very contagious, and it's a powerful fuel. Together, those two exude a confidence. When you have joy, you have enthusiasm, get the job done, you exude a confidence. And that confidence affects everything else we do. When we believe we can, when we know we are called for great things, that's emotional. Get stirred up, and it creates a confidence that becomes an X factor. Our self-confidence, our belief in something is so powerful. And in most workplaces, trainers, managers are preoccupado. They're preoccupied. They're worried with the transfer of knowledge. And that's all they want. And that's, you need more than that. The motivation to embrace knowledge, that makes the difference. And what generates motivation? Emotions. The word motivate, look at emotions. It's got the same base word, M-O-T, to move. What kind of motor you got in that thing to move? It's what it means. And I teach on emotional intelligence. So many people are misguided on emotions. They think if they get emotional, there's something wrong. No, that means you're human. That means there's something right. That means you care. That means you have compassion. If you have no emotion, I've seen a lot of marriages with no emotion. There's not good stuff going on. There's no physicality. There's nothing, because emotions move people. And while excessive emotions can temporarily disrupt reasoning or analysis, new studies suggest that in most cases, too little emotion can be even more devastating to career or organization. According to Josh Hammond, who was the president of the American Quality Foundation, emotions have a high-performance definition, which is present at the heart of every leading enterprise, but is little recognized or valued in most of today's other organizations. I mean, the old way of thinking, especially with men, about emotions. Emotions distract us. It's a sign of weakness to have emotion. There's no place in business for emotion. We believe a good manager should know emotion. We believe that emotions make us vulnerable. We believe we're supposed to avoid emotions, that we had to be controlling, that we had to get rid of emotions, that we got to stay away from emotional words. We have the lie, the false belief that emotions interfere with the business. Oh my gosh, so untrue. We got to create the new paradigm. This is the new reality. This is what science says, that emotions don't distract us. They motivate us. It's not a sign of weakness to show emotions, to have emotions. It means you're human. It's a sign of strength. Emotions are crucial in business. We spend a majority of our waking hours there. A powerful leader can inspire people emotionally. Emotions make us real. They make us live. It's something people connect with. Emotions, based on right brain development, trigger learning. We empower with our emotions. We integrate and connect with people with our emotions. We talk the same language of our people when we use emotional words. And emotions drive the mission. In Leadership Awakening, my lead course, in 48 hours, it will change your world. I always tell people, give me 48 hours and I'll give you a new heart. Give me 48 hours, I'll give you a new marriage. Give me 48 hours, I'll give you a new way of thinking. And so a lot of people send me testimonials. And while I was getting ready for this podcast, I came around a testimonial I must have got 20 years ago. It's from a man by the name of Mark Sanders. I still remember Mark. He was a construction worker. I mean, he was pretty shut down. He had a lot of pain. And like with a lot of people, when we have a lot of pain, we learn to go numb with it. And Mark Sanders was one of those guys. And so he was talking about the class. And let me just bring in halfway. He sent me like a 3-page email. It was actually on his BlackBerry. I guess right here is a BlackBerry. So he goes on to say in this letter he wrote me, he says, anyways, I was insecure, not very confident, regretful of the past, very dead, in fact. I remember that second morning of class when I found out that we were going to give a speech. I was terrified. I wanted to quit so bad for what seemed like hours, which was likely just 10 minutes. I wanted to leave. My legs wouldn't move, though. Then I heard a voice, not my voice, but a very loud voice telling me to trust the process. I didn't wait to be last, but I got up and spoke. The speech was bad, but I wasn't terrified anymore. At that moment, I knew someone had sent me a rope. It was God was answering a prayer, and I was aware of the gift I was being given. My mom, see, died at a very difficult time in my life. My marriage was breaking up. I was married to a serial cheater. I was devastated. I was hurt. I was humiliated, and for the first time in my life, my mom couldn't help. She was too sick. My support was gone. I'm ashamed to tell you this, but in the end, I never said goodbye or that I loved her. The last time I spoke to my mom when she was alive, she told me to get home and take care of my family. She actually had no idea I was dying inside. To cut myself a break, the last time I spoke to her, I had no idea it would be the last time I would ever talk to her. When they tried to take her off the respirator that night, she had a stroke and would be gone a few days later. The point is that God had given me a gift. the chance to tell my mom how I felt, and I missed it. And carry that pain, Mr. Black, for 24 years. There are only three people I've ever told this to. Susan knows, and so does Miss Carmen, who's in his training. And of course, I do know that my mother does know how I feel and what's in my heart. What I learned in Lake Forest in Leadership Awakening is that life is a very special gift, even the bad stuff, or at least what one perceives as the bad stuff. I've learned that the bad stuff might be the greatest gift of all, so you best be paying attention. He's not going to send you $1 million. He's going to give you a new job. He may even have you fired from the old one first. All this to say, I'm very aware of the gift I was given when Mr. Lopez sent me to you to attend Leadership Awakening. It was the answer to the prayer, God, please make me happy. He didn't send me instant happiness. He sent me to you. He sent me a new life. He sent me a new attitude with focus and passion. I still struggle and fall down almost every day, but now I pick myself up. I dust myself off, and I hit it again. And he goes on to say, thank you for everything you've done for me. Merry Christmas, Mr. Sanders. Passion, heart, body, and soul. You see, it's the power of emotion. That's the essence. And that's why today I want to really hit hard neuroassociative conditioning. You see, there are two basic drivers in life. And this is why you got to understand that your greatest asset might just be your pain. Today, I want you to understand the most powerful and potent path to one's heart is through their pain. And there's something called neuroassociative conditioning. And it really comes down to the base way of how we're moved. And really, it comes down to two basic drivers in life. We're either moving towards something or we're moving away from something. More specifically, we're even moving towards something we desire, toward pleasure, or we're moving away from pain. Do you see how our emotions come down to the base driver? And Tony Robbins has done a lot of work on this on his own website. I just cut and paste this. He talks about neuro-social conditioning. And he says it's an understanding of really what moves people. You know, motivation is the art of moving people. Leadership is the ability to move people in a positive direction. Positive change is about moving ourselves from one set of beliefs, behaviors, attitudes, and actions to a brand new set of beliefs, behaviors, attitudes, and actions that allows us to be the person we need to be and then to do what that person needs to do. So in other words, emotions move people. As Tony Robbins' website states, the human brain is hardwired for pleasure. I can tell you right now from my own personal experience, I can look back at things I did in college and what drove me in those years, for those decades. And it was pleasure seeking. It was pain avoidance. And that's what it comes down to. Humans have a unique pleasure circuit. Other animals don't have it. At its best, this pleasure circuit rewards us for things like helping others, exercising, meditating, you know, taking care of ourselves. At its worst, it craves short-term fixes like sugary foods, alcohol, drugs. The human brain is adaptable. We are pliable. We are called to be Semper Gumby, always flexible. And our brain has unlimited plasticity. We have 78 organs in our body, and each one has a lifespan, probably about 120 years if you go back to the post-flood, except our brain. You see, our brain can heal itself from major injuries. Our brain can learn amazing new skills. The adaptability of the brain is called plasticity, and it means we can reprogram or program our brain and its pleasure circuit however we like. And that's what neuroassociative conditioning is. NAC, NAC, is a tool that can help us do this based on how we're made. How can you use it to achieve your goals? Well, there's actually a six-step process, right? I got on Tony Robbins' website. It's pretty simple. And he always goes, I believe this with all my heart. It's always about commitment. Nothing great happens without commitment. So in any process, I don't care what you're doing, step one is decide. Make a decision. Commit. Focus is always our first decision. Before we can work toward any goals, we got to decide what they are. And too many people focus on what they don't want. I don't want to be yelled at. I don't want to be in a dead-end job. I don't. Why does that matter? Because we have a RAS. It's a stem in the back of the brain, part of the unconscious brain. As a matter of fact, in the next podcast, I'm going to go into the reticular activating system, the RAS, because it is a secret. It is really the secret to programming and reprogramming your mind, and it's the unconscious mind. We got to realize that. We can reprogram our brain, but we've got to decide. Look up epigenetics. Bruce Lipton, Dr. Caroline Leaf, that we have switches on our DNA. We have switches on our RNA. And through our environment, we can turn switches on and off, technically altering to a degree our genetic code on how it shows up. See, we've got to focus on what we do want and be specific. Our mind needs it. Step number two, leverage. Fully commit to your mission. In order to do that, we got to reprogram our brain. We got to use the emotions. That's what neuro-associative programming is, or conditioning is. It is taking our emotions, and we're either moving towards something or moving away from something. And I don't think either one's a better motivator, although I think most people are motivated by moving away from things. I know I am. We've got to associate massive pleasure with achieving our goals and massive pain with any actions that detract. That's the key, being emotionally involved. If we are not emotionally involved, then when things get tough, and they will, we'll quit. If we're not emotionally involved, when we get knocked on our butt, and it will happen, we won't get back up, or we'll get back up and turn around and go the other way. We got to decide emotionally, what will it cost me if I don't make these changes? Am I the type of person that lives this low life, or I'm no longer the type of person that does this? You've got to decide. How will I feel when I accomplish my goals? It's time to get emotional. And once you get some emotion created, then you got to do step three, which is interrupt. You've got to scratch that CD. You've got to break that LP. You got to pull on that 8-track. Neurosocial conditioning is about getting emotionally involved, creating pain if you don't follow through on your goal, and creating joy and pleasure if you do, because you're either moving away from pain and or you're moving forward pleasure. So if that's how you're driven, then get involved. Manipulate. Get it working. We all have thoughts and behaviors that don't serve us, yet we carry them with us as a result of our upbringing and past experiences programming. We may think we don't deserve to be healthy and happy, so we reach for another piece of cake. Or we believe that piece of cake is going to make us happy, but it's a momentary feel-good for a long time of pain. And what we do is we self-medicate, so we don't think about the pain. We just focus on the pleasure. This is where we got to get in the game. Between the stimulus and the response, there's a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. So step four, it's time to create. Remember Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created. Stop there. Our first introduction to God is as creator. And then 25 verses later says, let us make man in our image, under our likeness. We were made to create. It happens automatically. So now get out of the passenger seat and get in the driver's seat. Associating pain with actions that are not in line with our goals is only one part of neuro-associative conditioning. The second part is replacing old patterns with new empowering alternatives. Remember, this is where we got to understand how a habit works. A habit is a behavior that has become repeated enough times to become automatic. And the ultimate purpose of habits is to solve the problems of life with as little energy and effort as possible. So remember, any habit can be broken down into a feedback loop. Four steps, right? There's a cue, there's a craving, there's a response, there's a reward. And the four laws of behavior change are a simple set of rules to build better habits. So on the cue, make it obvious. On the craving, make it attractive. On the response, make it easy. And on the reward, make it satisfying. Notice the emotions. Attractive, easy, satisfying. And logically, the inverse of the four laws, again, is how you break bad habits. On the cue, make it invisible. On the craving, make it unattractive, undesirable, maybe even painful. On the response, make it difficult, maybe even painful. On the reward, make it unsatisfying, maybe even painful. Why? Because neuro-associative conditioning says we will move away from pain and we will move toward pleasure. So it's how you work. Some examples could be reach for a healthy snack instead and imagine you're enjoying it. Think about what is going to reward you. Think about being thin. How about this? When you stand up to go to the fridge, what if you connected a habit stack and maybe connect that to going right out the door and taking a walk instead? Maybe replacing all those things that you stream, whether it be Netflix or Hulu, whatever, and replace it with journaling, meditation, visualization practices that maybe could help program the unconscious mind. How about modeling a strategy that's helpful? Find someone who has created the life you want and study them. Model their habits, their beliefs. Step five, condition. Again, I just want you to look at those last four things we were talking about. Make it attractive, make it easy, make it satisfying, or make it unattractive, make it difficult, or make it unsatisfying. To see the laws of habit, make the cue attractive, make the cue easy, make it satisfying if you want it. All emotions, all triggers are good responses. You can do that. So NAC, neuro-associative conditioning, rebuilds the reward center of your brain. The more you perform your new habit, the more your brain will send out reward molecules like serotonin and dopamine. And these molecules help to carve out a new pathway called a neural pathway in your brain. Isn't that cool? And instead of getting a quick sugar high from cake, you feel energetic and alive all day because you're eating healthy. You're becoming the man or the woman you want to be. Instead of struggling to get out of bed and feeling distracted all day, you feel focused and excited to have a new day. You create a morning ritual. You create a habit. And then step six, test it. Remember the pattern. You always got to test it to see if it runs or not. All new habits need to be tested because we'll go on vacation and be tempted by an endless buffet. You head to happy hour with friends and be tempted to stay out all night and feel sluggish and unfocused the next day. See, it's about in the point of decision. Commitment at the point of decision is true commitment. And then what we actually got to do is run it when it's something bad's happening. Run a test thing in your mind. Imagine yourself in a tempting situation, like at a buffet or looking at a text message inviting you to happy hour. What are your options? What are the consequences? What do you do? If you make the wrong choice, go back to step five and continue conditioning until you've mastered behavior. See, this is why I said at the beginning, the pain of our past can be our greatest asset. I can tell you today, I am so thankful for my pain. Without my pain, without the abuse, without the neglect, without the abandonment, I wouldn't have street cred. Without all that pain, I wouldn't be driven to be better. I wouldn't have compassion for someone who's struggling. I wouldn't look at people who are doing things at a lower level, who are struggling, and say, but by the grace of God, there go I. The pain of our past, if we choose, can be one of our greatest assets. It is one of our keys to our good fight. What do we do with our pain? It can either make us bitter or better. Better is a conscious choice. Bitter is an autopilot response to someone wrapped up in a self-focused existence. Today's podcast is about understanding three things. Understanding the power of our pain, realizing there's a purpose for our pain. It moves us. It allows us to know someone, something needs to be adjusted. And the commitment, the understanding that we could use our pain for good and for God. Warriors, today, I've had us consider the statement, the pain of our past can be our greatest asset. Just like so many things in life, it comes down to a choice. And our choices have consequences. And we can choose to make this a true sentence. We can take anything and use it for our good. Our painful past can really be our greatest asset. That understanding, that empathy, that humanity is unique to us and our experience. The pain of our past can be what moves us in a positive direction. And we can use the pain from our past to motivate us to help others. Think about this. Helping others out of their pain allows us to grow a life beyond our wildest dream. Once we realize that all people hurt and that hurting people hurt people, when we reach out, we can change someone's, not just their life, but their destiny. The most powerful and potent path to one's heart is through their pain. Can our pain of the past be one of our greatest traits and qualities, this which propels us? Yes, yes, yes. The answer is yes. But there are things to consider about this possibility that we must first endure letting go. We first must endure that we are not God, that everybody makes mistakes. We must first endure forgiveness, grace, mercy, and let it go. The Bible says, "Vengeance is mine, declares the Lord, I will repay." Let it go and let God. As warriors, we must put on our big boy pants, our big girl pants, and let it go and let God. Thank you so much for joining me today. Please like this show and subscribe to get more great content like this. Also, I'd love to hear from you. So please leave me a review. If you would like more information or you'd like to connect with me, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does. It is Way of Warrior.